This episode is brought to you by Harrah's Resort SoCal. Nestled against a rolling hillside and just down the road from Palomar Mountain, guests at Harrah's Resort SoCal can expect gorgeous views, friendly staff, available night and day to encourage everyone to have a great time. When I was there recently, I had a chance to dine at California's first and the nation's largest Hell's Kitchen. And it's true, the beef Wellington and sticky toffee dessert are great. The restaurant is inspired by the hit TV show and features a menu approved by the Michelin star celebrity chef, Gordon Ramsay himself. Hope to see you all at Harrah's Resort SoCal in 2024.
It's now you can have a sample of your body fluids and run it through the chip, and the chip can basically detect cancer for you. Now putting that chip in the toothbrush, so when you brush your teeth and make the bristles semi-permeable and the plastic, the layer of the plastic semi-permeable, your saliva goes through the chip, goes through the toothbrush, goes in the toothbrush, just this chip, and the saliva goes through the chip, and the chip detects cancer for you. Everything will go through, except the cancer cells will stay on top. The cancer cells stay on top, not because it's big, but because it has certain characteristics the chip can attract. Hi guys, I'm James Nguyen, and I'm the 17-year-old cancer toothbrush guy. And I'm honored today to be on the Vietnamese podcast with the one and only Kenneth Nguyen.
Welcome to the Vietnamese. I'm your host, Kenneth Nguyen. Being part of a culture of nearly 100 million Vietnamese people in the world today comes with a lot of pain, proud history, and privilege. Join me as I highlight and explore the Vietnamese experience from all over the world. Thank you. That's a very warm introduction, James. Thank you very much. Thanks for being here.
I'm just trying to take over your show. So, anytime you feel like you're tired or anything, just hit me up. I'll change it to Vietnamese with James Nguyen.
Oh, that's a great idea. I appreciate the offer.
I'm just kidding.
You've been here for a very short amount of time, and we're going to hear your English here pretty soon. But being gone from Vietnam for just 3 years, have you had enough time to think about what it means to be Vietnamese?
I don't know. How do you define an American? How do you define an American? Because I can go live in, like, let's say, any random, like, India. So now I'm Vietnamese Indian. Like, just because my blood is Vietnamese, right? My genetics is Vietnamese. But then I live in an Indian place that's, like, filled with Indian traditions and culture. So it's like, more or less, I'm going to be soaked up of that culture. I'm going to soak up that tradition, because it's where I live. It's my habitat. So the environment, it affects you from the outside in.
So, that's a great question. I don't know when are we expected to use the word American? You know, yeah. I'm born here, so I would consider myself definitely American. My parents would consider themselves Vietnamese American as well. But you're right. At what point do you become a New Yorker or an Angeleno, right? And people say 10 years for New Yorkers. If you live over a decade, then you have the right to call yourself a New Yorker. I don't know. That's kind of like a general rule I've heard for New York, because it's like a badge of honor to live it through and survive it through in New York. Now, in America, I don't know. You've been here for 3 years, but I assume that you're going to be finding your education, continuing your education at higher education here in the U.S. and stay and work in the U.S. And, you know, so it's an interesting thing for me to talk to somebody who's just come from Vietnam very recently. How did you get so good in English?
Number one, probably because I'm still young. And the language, it's quick. My brain's still plastic. You know, it's quick to learn when I'm still young, but like probably like 50, 60, it's hard to learn a language. So number one is probably because I'm young. Number two is because I listen to a lot of music, and it's all English. I watch YouTube videos, movies, videos, it's all English. Talk to friends, it's all English. I only speak Vietnamese to my mom, my parents, and my brother, and basically my family. I did learn a bit of English before I came over, though.
So just a little bit.
Yeah.
And it just got better in 3 years, that fast.
Yeah. I mean, the challenge for kids moving over is to remember their Vietnamese, not learn English, because the learning English will happen for sure. But the challenge is like, can they still keep the Vietnamese up or lose the route?
Is that a priority for you?
I don't keep it in the forefront of my head and be like, oh, I need to keep this Vietnamese language. Because I know I'm gonna speak it, like I'm not gonna lose it because I talk with my parents and my brother, my family using Vietnamese. So and my friends are Vietnamese. Sometimes we talk in Vietlish. So I know I'm not gonna lose it. So it was never like a priority, like, oh, it's like the top of the thing to keep the Vietnamese speaking ability. It's just I know it's gonna be there, and it will stay there.
Now, I know you've probably gone through a million interviews in the last few weeks about what you've done with the cancer detecting toothbrush, but please, if you can, walk me through the ideation, where it came from, the story of why it was created and how it was created. Like, is there a patent process that you had to think about before you released it to the news outlets, before some big corporation might take a hold of that idea? I want to know all of it. So can we start with the idea, the basic idea of it?
So I immigrated to the US summer 2019. 7 months later, that's also when about COVID started to hit. My grandma got glioblastoma, and then she passed away quickly after that because it was a late notice. And then, I was depressed because you couldn't do anything but like witness your loved one just died away. So, but then I started to think about what the heck happened with the disease. Like, so like, what is this cancer thing? Why is it like so it's known to be notorious, like, and very dangerous. So why is it that way? And it's just I keep asking why, and I keep just googling things about cancer, and then I keep learning about it, like soaking up all the knowledge. And then before I knew it, I was in the journey of writing a cancer research paper. And just to learn, just to build the background knowledge about this cancer, because cancer is, there's so many things to know about it. So it took me a long time to build a strong foundation knowledge of the disease. And after that, I came across this idea of a chip that can separate different types of cell. And then I don't know where the connection is between the chip and the toothbrush. It's like a eureka moment where it just happened. Like the most creative ideas that hit you, it doesn't come when you're forcing it. It comes when you're like washing the dish, or like walking the dog, or like just taking a shower. It comes unconsciously, right? So then there's this chip, and there's a lot of complex science behind the chip, but you know how a filter works?
Yeah.
A filter, you run water through the filter, everything will go through, except for the big things will stay on top. That filter is like the chip, but you run your bodily fluids through the chip. So you run your body fluids through the chip, everything will go through, except the cancer cells will stay on top. The cancer cells stay on top, not because it's big, but because it has certain characteristic the chip can attract. So then that's very exciting because now you can it's now you can have a sample of your body fluids and run it through the chip, and the chip can basically detect cancer for you. Now putting that chip in the toothbrush, so when you brush your teeth and make the bristles semi-permeable and the plastic, the layer of the plastic semi-permeable, your saliva goes through the chip, oh no, goes through the bristles, goes through the toothbrush, goes in the toothbrush, and the toothbrush just this chip, and the saliva goes through the chip, and the chip detect cancer for you. And then that is that. And then after that, I try to get some proof of concept in the lab. That took a long time. And then after that, I applied to the Rise Scholarship, and then not scholarship, it's like a competition with a lifetime benefits. And then I didn't think much about it. I was just like, okay, just apply for this thing at school, and then it's a lifetime of benefits, so like why not try and give it a shot? You never know, the the end result is much higher than the effort you need to put in.
Wow.
So the benefit that comes out is much higher than the input, the effort you need to put in the first place. So then it's a gain, net gain overall. Let's say if I lose, I still have the experience, right? And it's worth a shot. So I
What is the
didn't think
competition
much about
called?
it. Rise.
And it's for youth, or
Rise, yes.
what is Rise exactly for?
It's founded by former CEO of Google, Eric Schmidt. He's worth like $23 billion, and so he took $1 billion out of his net worth into this Rise Foundation, and it's a philanthropic enterprise. So he's trying to. I talked with the CEO of the company, and he basically said what Rise do is they bet early on young talents. And he said, he told me, I remember he told me that research shows there's a lot of evidence that there's a lot of indicators that show up for success like later in your career when you're still a teenager. So what they're trying to do is they're trying to see who has those indicators, and then they select those, and then they put them into this Rise winner cohort. And then they, with the $1 billion that Eric Schmidt supply, they use that to give you like scholarship, opportunities, mentorship, funding to basically make your idea come true.
And how many winners or categories are in the cohort?
There's no category, but it's 125,000 people apply over 125 countries. So it's a gigantic pool. And then from those 125K, you screen down to 500 finalists. 500 finalists turn into 100 winners. And then 100 winners, five was on Good Morning America. So I was one of those. And then,
Is it
out
the
of those
top
five,
five?
I was the only one with the, I don't know. I asked them about that. Is it the top five that you're picking or something? And then they say, no, it's just there. It's just representing, the most diverse area, and with the most, diverse, personality, ethnicity, culturally. Yeah. So like two girl, three boy, from one from Vietnam, Philippine, Japanese, Indian, Burkina Faso. So it's like covering the whole world basically, and across all the disciplines in the STEM and humanities. Yeah, so it's just like they just want to represent a big field of like people, big field of subjects.
So, from the time that your grandmother passed to the time that you completed the paper to submit to Rise, how much time was that?
Oh, 2.5 years, 3 years, something like that. Yeah.
And in those 2.5 years, did you, in your mind, think that this is going to work? The actual product, the design that you've come up with.
Don't know until you test it. You don't know until you test it.
So this is a paper that you've hypothesized that I have this idea. Here's what I've researched. I've put it together in this paper. You don't have a prototype or anything yet.
I do have a prototype. I do have a prototype, the proof of concept. Now we're trying to actually make a product, which is at least 10 times harder than
Yeah.
getting the proof of concept,
Yeah.
because just because you have the proof of concept in the lab, it doesn't mean the production process is easy. The
Yeah.
production process is a whole beast in itself. Yeah.
Okay. I want to talk about two things. I want to talk about how you got to the prototype. Like, where did you go for money to build a prototype and who backed you? Like, you have this idea as a young man and you're like, why? I would need to get this made. How do you go and you find a way to materialize this prototype? It's not easy.
Eric Schmidt. Yeah, the billionaire fund.
Before Rise.
After Rise.
So let me get this straight. You work 2.5 years to write the paper, you submit it to Rise, and then they're like, okay, you're good to go. Here's the money to make the prototype. So you just made the prototype recently. Got it. Got it. And what was the steps to making the prototype?
Oh, it's just a bunch of trial and error. So you do something and you test it. If it works, you keep building on it, on top of it. If it doesn't work, you scratch it and you rebuild it until it works. And then you just trying to get a consecutive row of working.
Yeah,
And then you
but
just build on top of it.
where are you going to do it? Like, you drive to an office, you go to a lab, like, how is it?
It's in a biotech startup that a local one that connected with, and they're willing to test drive my idea. Yeah.
Got it. And what's the hardest part about it?
The hardest part, I mean, everything is hard, but the hardest part is keeping dealing with uncertainty. And yeah, dealing with uncertainty, because you never know until you do it. Like, you can think, you may think that it will not work, but what if it in reality will work? So you don't know until you try it. And then yeah, it's just a lot of experimenting. And then the key is making the right decision in the right time. So I've been reading a lot of books just to hone that decision-making skill, to
Yeah.
make sure like I'm sharp enough to make the right decisions.
Now, why do you say it's 10 times harder once it goes to production?
Because getting a proof of concept in the lab is just like doing a science experiment and testing things. You can manipulate things, but the production process, I mean, I shouldn't use the word production process. It's more like the company building a company out of it is 10 times harder,
It makes
because
sense.
now you're pulling in the production process, the you know the advertisement, the user interface, like all of all the factors it comes in, and the competition in the market, the organization that will come after me, there's all sort of crazy things.
But you sound like you're wearing a CEO hat at that point. Is that what you're expected to do coming out of Rise? Is to lead the company, or is it
I want
you're
to be.
okay?
I
So
want to be the one.
are you going to be creating an LLC for this product and then creating the whole branding, the whole campaign to put it out to market?
Yes, but not just by myself. So I need a freaking team.
Yeah.
Like
And how do you build that team?
network. I know some pretty darn smart people.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, like Elon Musk, like he said before that. He built a space company, but he has no degree at all in aerodynamics
Yeah.
and space technology. When the interviewer asked him, so how the heck does that come about? And then he just said, well, you can learn anything free on YouTube, first of all. The second of all is he reads a lot of books and he talked to a lot of smart people. And sometimes the leader doesn't need to know anything about
Right.
the energy. Is you know, I don't know. But I don't know if the exact guy, but I think it's Steve Jobs. He said that his role is to make sure the part works together. He doesn't actually need to know what happened in the part. His job is just to make sure the part works together. So it's like a harmonic, like, you know, like a at
Orchestra
a
conductor.
yes.
So you really don't have any interest in sort of being just a scientist that's building this thing. You want to run a company that handles all of the production, marketing, everything that the product takes to get to the mass market.
I'm worried about making an impact more than building a company. Building a company is a way to make an impact. Yeah.
And what's the impact that you want to make?
Save cancer patients' lives. That is a very general and, common goal that a lot of scientists and doctors have. My vision is to, I envision a world where cancer is at as easily treated as the common cold.
Yeah.
And it's not just like something that when we think of it, it's like, oh, I can't deal with that. It's just cancer. Oh, like done deal. It's
How
like,
far away do you think we are from curing cancer?
don't think cancer has a cure, but there's a way to deal with it. Just like the common cold. You know that the common cold does not have a cure. It doesn't have a cure because the common flu is caused by 300 plus different types of rhinoviruses. So how the heck do you make a cure for 300 different types of rhinoviruses? If you make a cure, it might work for 50, but then the R250 doesn't work. When you make it work for 150, the R150 doesn't work. So like, how do you? Because it's so diverse, it's so various in its form that it's hard to make one single cure. So we have vaccines that, build up our immune system to attack it. And luckily, we're strong enough to attack the flu and keep it down. But, thousands of people still die nationally from the flu. So it's still deadly. But we live on with it like it's nothing. So just like cancer is kind of like the common cold because it's so various in its form. So like two people, let's say two people, person A and person B, both have lung cancer and they both have the same size tumor in the same exact lung in the same exact spot in the lung. So everything's the same. Same lung cancer type, same tumor size, same location, same everything. You make a drug, you make a therapy, it works for person A. It's still possible for it to work for person A, but not for person B. Why is that? Well, it's because person A is different from person B. It's easy as that. It's just because the biology is different.
Well,
So then now that's just two. Now what if you have 300,000 cancer
yeah.
patients? Well, like
You
that's
can't
like yeah.
take care of all the variants.
Yes, exactly. So then there's got to be another strategy at it. Instead of just attacking it straight on, there's got to be a
Way to
way
curve it.
to, yeah, circumvent the, yeah.
Yeah. How do you balance school life and this side of the award with Rise and developing a company? How do you balance it all?
Oh, there's nothing to balance. I mean, you just come to school and then you just live your life up. You just do what the work that's handed out to you and just do the best you can. And then talk to teachers, have fun, get to know people, and then that's school. And then this Rise thing is just like every once a week, you'd be like. NBC, ABC, Fox is contacted the principal. Principal contact me, like another interview, James, another interview, another interview. I'm like, okay, got it. And then my brother at home, be like, okay, yeah, I'll prepare all the suits for you. And then just come in and then yeah, just
But what about the
they
actual work itself, on the toothbrush? Is it, I mean, going into the lab and going into the office, don't you have to spend time doing that?
yes. I do. You go to school. Sometimes I don't even pay attention in class because my mind is thinking about this cancer toothbrush thing.
Yeah.
So then, but I just, the end goal is to get sure to get just the grade, right? Just to get the A, and then that's easy enough to do. Sometimes you don't even need to pay attention to get an A.
Yeah.
And you just get the assignment in. Sometimes it's easy like that. I mean, most of the kids most of my peers, they don't pay attention that much anyway. They don't pay 100% attention anyway. Right? It's very hard to find a person who's like solely focused just on the subject in class for a whole 56 minutes of a
Yeah.
period. Yeah, so then yeah, sometimes I think about it in class. Sometimes I do it in a laptop. Nobody knows. I'm just sitting and I'm typing something, and it's the work for the toothbrush. And then I do it after school. And then Saturday, Sunday, got a lot of free time, so that's when I hit hard on the project.
What is the career trajectory of somebody in your situation? Like, what do you think about?
Career trajectory.
Yeah, where do you want to go?
I'm not very like I'm not very attached to an end destination, so I don't know what the heck the end destination is. I'm just trying to make the most out of the journey, because you make the most of the journey, no matter where you end up, you still win. You still win in life and career. So just trying to make the most out of the journey I'm in, every single moment, just make the best decision, and then wherever it leads, it leads to whatever it leads to.
Well, I mean, what kind of industry do you want to eventually be in?
Biotech.
Biotech.
Well, if this, let's say 2 years from now, this cancer detecting toothbrush idea became a failure. Say something happened and it doesn't work in the market. Let's say we get everything ready, but then something happened and then it doesn't work. Let's say we get people to use it for a couple months, and then something happened, and then product get shunned by society, and then it doesn't work anymore. Well, at that point, I'll try to have other ideas and then build other companies out of it. So I always have backup plans. So, how Elon Musk, he has like 12 companies.
Yeah.
Like, even if one idea failed, does it matter? Because it's the other 11 idea. It's very impact making. The impact it can have is tremendous, because his mindset is very big. He thinks big, and then he's like a workaholic. So then, this is strive, right? He work on the idea really hard, and make sure it becomes a reality. Works like 120 hours a week. So then,
Yeah.
yeah, so don't keep your all the eggs in one basket, basically. If you
So,
fail, still have
can you
backup
share
plans.
with me other biotech ideas that you have?
I don't have another biotech idea, but I have other idea. So how Elon Musk, he has like a, let's say, solar panels, right? Solar City, Tesla, electric car, SpaceX, reusable rockets and going to Mars, the Boring Company digging tunnels, Neuralink inserting chip into brains. Yeah, a bunch of other things. And then, so it's not all in one biotech category, right? It's every big problem that needs to be solved. So there's this idea of space mining. So you know how minerals and materials on Earth are being depleted quickly, right? But in space, there are plenty. So what if we go to space and mine it, and then go back on Earth to use it and sell it? There's this theory that we can, that the first effective space miner has the potential to be a trillionaire. A trillionaire. Because resources out in space is worth it's there's a lot out there in space. But see, I don't know how much a diamond is worth, but let's say a diamond is worth like a million. Let's just say a diamond this size is worth a million. And then there's no more of this such kind on Earth, but you need it. So you go to space and you find like a bunch of these, and you go back and you sell them for like 1 million, 2 million, and then yeah. That is more of like a making money perspective more than a solving problem perspective.
Or impact creating.
Yeah, or impact rating, yeah.
And what else do you do in your spare time?
Oh, everybody thinks I'm a nerd, because I'm too sciencey in math and
But
all
nerds
that.
are cool, right? In high school? Are they still cool or they're not cool? I don't know.
It's subjective. It's subjective. I don't even know what people think, and I don't care what people
Yeah.
think. I care about the people that I care about. Like, I care about the people that I care about, what they think, but not like any random dude or girl like out there in the corner pointing at me like, oh, like this dude, like that, like it's not worth it. It's not credible. Yeah, so you gotta pick the right person to listen to, basically. And I'm kind of proud and confident that I have those people in mind. I've built the relationship throughout the years, so that's good.
All right, let's get back to your spare time. What do you do?
I rap. I listen to rap music. Yeah.
I love it. How did you get into it?
How did I get into it?
Yeah, how did you get into rap?
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Music.
I've always been a music obsessed kid. Like, ever since I was at elementary school, like, I listened to, I remember, like, Maroon 5, like, on repeat, like whatever song that sounds good, like the melody, the beat, and the rhythm, I just listen to it, and then like I feel like I lose everything in that moment. Like, I
Yeah.
don't care about everything else. Like, I lose myself in the moment of listening to music and just dancing away to the beat, to the rhythm, to the
Well,
melody.
why didn't you go into music or think about it?
I don't know, actually.
Right? I
It's
mean,
something you
it sounds like you're
enjoy.
obsessed with music
You have
and
passion.
you have passion and you get into things that are you go all in, it sounds like, as a young man. But, you and I have talked about rap music on another call, and you seem very dedicated to learning about rap music and really participating in the actual rapping of, whether it's on karaoke or whatever form that you do it. You go all in. So I'm like, well, why didn't you become?
I go all in is because it's a way for me to de-stress myself. It's a way to like take my mind off of like 1,000 lists of like dealing with a list of 1,000 bullet points, like to make the company work. Take the mind off of that and into this, okay, let's just have some fun. And de-stress, like recuperate and be like a human, and then back to work again.
Yeah, but then rap is an interesting choice. you know, as a scientist, as a so-called self-proclaimed nerd that you called yourself, like, why rap and why do you think you gravitate towards rap?
It just sounds good. I don't know. It just sounds good. It's like, if you ask, like, why eat another piece of chocolate? Why watch another movie?
It's just because I don't know. I could guess, if you were asked me why I listen to rap, I could formulate some explanation. And I was looking for that explanation because we talked about actually the meaning of rap, right?
Yeah.
And we talked about the lyrical side of rap that you don't pay attention to. You don't really care about.
Yeah, sometimes the lyric resonate with you, and that's why people listen to rap. Yes.
Right.
Yes, the lyrics resonate with you. Yes, yes. That is a definitely
the lyrics case. Resonate. The yes. music is feng fou dai.
Yes. Yeah, it's a side.
The side thing.
Yeah.
For me, when I listen to rap music, I really get into the words and I get into what the poet basically is saying about his society, making commentary. But you don't really care about that. And I find that interesting. I find it interesting because it sounds almost like a mathematical kind of rhythmic pattern and beat that you're experiencing rather than.
Yes. Yes, exactly. So if you follow me in the day in school, you will see that I sit in a chair in the classroom and I never stay still. My feet always tap, and like I hold a pencil. I always try to tap the table to create some type of beat. And sometimes I mix it all up, and then the guy behind me starts singing because he's enjoying the beat. he's in the choir, and he's like the president of the choir, actually. So then, like, we were sitting, and then we were just making beat, and then I was like making some beat with my mouth, and then like kind of like beatboxing, and then tapping my foot, and then with this thingy, like making all sort of sound with the table, right? And then like he was in the background, just like be like this, and then like eventually he started singing, and then like, yeah,
it's so random.
It's so random, but it happens like daily. But it happens daily, so that it's just like. I mean, it's just like a little quirk to my personality, I guess. It's just this music, like the love for music, I guess. It's for the beat, for the rhythm, for the melody.
No. I, you know, you and I gone into that whole, you know, Travis Scott, and we got into, you know, some of the music and lyrics, and I found it so fascinating. You know, I come for the science, but I stay for the rap, right?
Okay.
Do you follow rap music in Vietnam?
Yes.
And do you listen to the lyrics in Vietnam, in Vietnamese?
Yes. Most of the lyrics are pickup lines. And it's just this funny. It's not funny. It's like very easy to go viral. Like pickup lines that, you know, jojo.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So yeah. Those things.
Wordplay.
Yes, wordplay. And then it rhymes. And then in tandem with the beat, with the way the rapper sing it off and the attitude and the image on the music video, everything is just beautiful.
So but that's what you're describing how I feel about American rap music, right?
Oh.
The lyrics. All of that, what you just described is how I feel about rap music. That when I talk to you about rap music, you completely don't even pay attention to the lyrical side, but in Vietnamese you do. You just really express the beauty of rap music in Vietnamese.
Well, partly because I understand what the heck the Vietnamese lyric is, and I don't understand what the heck they're rapping in English. Like half the time I'm just like, okay, so probably this rapper is just saying random things just to sound cool and get the, you know, the vibe off.
Yeah. We talked about that, and we actually went through an exercise together on Few Frames on a karaoke for Travis Scott together. We've gone through that.
Yeah.
And we recognize that it is not just random ideas that he's just throwing out there. These are ideas of flexing, of showing his power, of, you know, there's real life, ideas, but that's just Travis Scott. But if you go down the list of like, you go to like Tupac Shakur, this is his songs, his lyrics are taught at Berkeley. They're taught like at universities. They're broken down and they're understood for contextual notions of society that existed in the 90s.
It's I heard old school rap is more about, you know, describing the adversity in life and you know, overcoming that. Eminem, the what's this song? Lose Yourself. It's like I analyzed the lyrics once and it's just describing the feeling of, you know, nervousness, having one chance, one opportunity, you better not lose it, you know, can't take care of your kids, you know, single mom, all that, you know, daddy work from home, go home, but, you know, his daughter, and then it's emotional. It is right. Emotional.
And Vietnamese rap is not there yet, is it?
No, nowhere near. It is. Well, some song has it, but most of the most popular songs
are not.
Just pickup lines.
Yeah.
Most of the popular songs are like pickup lines and love, but there are some songs. But it's not the most popular. It's not a hit, but it's like the side track, you know, the not the most played track, but there are tracks that talks about adversity, definitely, for sure there is.
Yeah. Who are some of your favorite rappers, Vietnamese rappers? Top five. Just name five that's off the top of your head.
OSAD, Binzy, Justin T. Sung Dong, MTP. He's a singer rapper slash.
Yeah. And he's then, a powerhouse.
He is a powerhouse.
Yeah.
Who else?
Huawei?
No.
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 Why?
Carrick.
But now, why not Huawei?
Huawei. His music, the lyric side is, yes, it's deep for sure. It's a meaning for sure. Like life adversity, that's there for sure. It's the rhythm that I'm missing. It's the melody. It's the beat. It's that catchy, like hit potential beat rhythm that I like, that I love, that I come for. Every time I listen to music, all I want is the melody, the rhythm, the beat. Yeah. And
now,
his music.
Do you dream of
about being a rap star one day?
All right, answer that one.
Yes. All right, I will. I will write, I'll publish my own album. I'll sell out stadiums in Wembley and Paris, France.
Okay, wait. You're not fucking around right now. You're being honest.
No, I'm fucking around.
All right. Wait. but that wouldn't be crazy. That wouldn't be too far from, you know, why not, right? Why not be this, you know, biotech leader, as well as, you know, have a side hustle with rapping?
Well, imagine Mark Zuckerberg or Bill Gates or like Elon Musk started picking up a microphone and started rapping. How funny would that be?
Yeah, that'd be pretty funny.
I mean, it's
pretty goofy.
Usually the most famous people, they try to go hard in one field only. Otherwise, if you try two fields, then people will be confused of like, okay, what's this dude doing?
Yeah.
Or does he even know what he's doing? Right? So then I'll keep rapping as like a way for me to
outlet,
de-stress, and then you bond with people and then take my mind off to another planet. But like, yeah.
You're a big Zhengtan fan.
Yes.
And I was surprised to hear that.
Why?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know why it took me by surprise. I thought that maybe it's older people that enjoy his content, not so much the young folks in Vietnam or Vietnamese. I always thought it was maybe late 40s, 50s that enjoyed the writing, his thoughts, his comedy.
Yes, because. Okay, so the career of him, he started out very goofy. He started out very goofy, very talkative. Some would even call him yam or like, you know, silly, like has no meaning, just talking just to make people laugh in an obsessive, meaningless way. But then he moved and then like now it's very, very, very deep and meaningful. extremely. Like his movie, the lyrics of his songs, the what he says as a host of the TV show, the MC, right? Deal with any situation, and he's a fully mature. Every time he speaks, there's real meaning, there's real message, there's real powerful message. Like you can learn something. So then, that's what I love. And then the crazy thing, the nice thing about him is that while he's speaking in such a, you know, mature, like deep message, right? All that vibe, serious, and he throws in a joke out of nowhere, and people like crack up right away because it hit them off their guard. Like they don't have their guard up. It says, okay, this dude's going serious, and then the joke just come in. And every time he makes a joke, his face is extremely calm. So the audience doesn't know when it come. Right? There's some comedian that they start laughing before the joke, before they say the joke. So then the audience be like, oh, it's like something funny is about to hit, or like they're about to make some joke or something. So the effect is less. But with him, he mixed the serious and joking together so well.
Wow.
That's amazing.
How do you think he grew like that? Because, you know, Hai in Vietnam is typically, to me, you know, I could be just talking off my ass right now, but it's typically Nham, right?
Yes, yes.
And Nham is, in English, is sort of,
Nham in Vietnamese is probably, in English, it's like meaningless. It doesn't have
meaningless,
meaning.
Yeah. Yeah. Like dumb jokes. Nham is, doesn't matter. Matterless.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Matterless, meaningless, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, it doesn't have an, like... It's like you don't learn something from it.
You don't learn something. It's not serious. It's just, you know, and they say nyam nyi. It's just, it doesn't even matter. But how do you graduate like Jung Tan? That's what I'm curious. What is the process of growth that Jung Tan experienced to go from nyam and then slowly you watch a movie like Boya and you just, for me, crying from the depth of my heart and soul to understand what he was trying to say. And I find that to be, I don't know if it's Korean or American, the depth of that story of that film that he did won hearts and minds all over the world.
Yes.
How did he get like that? Do you know?
How do I know?
I don't know. I mean, do you follow the, do you?
How do I know what?
I'm not asking for your professional opinion about how you know. I'm asking if you've tracked it, if you've watched his progression, and if you can guess, how do you think he's been influenced from your perspective?
I remember when I was in middle school, I probably watched every single movie, like TV show that has him in it.
See? I knew you're a super fan.
And I think the root of it all started with his curiosity, because as a host, he would host a lot of shows, and it's just all interview, a lot of interview. And so he interviewed a lot of successful people, like 50, 40 years old. And the question he asks is like a impactful one. And it brings the story out. It brings the story out. It brings out the really juicy things to say, to talk about. And then he keeps asking those questions, and when he listened to these questions, he learned something from all these experienced people, right? You know, like Nam Minh Hung, or like the Hoai Linh, or like the older people, more experienced people, successful people, right? So then he learned something, and he keeps asking those questions. And what does that keep asking question comes from? It's from his curiosity. It's his like willingness to learn more, his openness to learn more.
I didn't know he was an interviewer in the early years.
He's a MC host, right? And then some of the shows are just purely interviewing.
Wow.
Some of the shows are like just like 3-4 of the shows are just purely. And then he likes to analyze things. So he analyzes things, and then his curiosity. Over time, he listened to all these positive, meaningful message from successful, experienced people. And it just integrates to him. It's just like, it's the same as like reading self-help books.
Yeah.
It's like reading, let's say you read 50 self-help books, the language in your brain completely changes. The way you think.
Yeah, rewires you. Changed.
Yeah, your brain's like rewired. Yeah.
Yeah.
So then he went. Now he becomes really deep, mature, and you know, and the funny side of him never gone. It's always there.
That's the brilliance. Yeah, you know, he can deliver these ideas in an entertaining and funny way, and they're deep. They're deep messages.
They are very deep. But the thing is, like, the movie he come up with the script and the storyline.
Storyline.
The storyline is amazing. Story is amazing. It's the plot twist. It's like you could never expect that.
Yeah.
Nobody expect that from
total
from,
surprises.
Yeah, total surprise.
Yeah,
he has a movie coming this year, 22 January.
That should be fascinating to watch.
That's like
so that movie.
Yeah, it's a that movie, but it's a family, and it's like the jokes, the funny scenes are definitely there, but the impact, the message this time. I don't know what the heck this is gonna be, but if it's him, it's gonna be a punch.
Yeah.
Big punch.
Yeah. Do you miss Vietnam?
I won't. Oh, I'm coming back this summer. I plan to. Yeah. Do I miss it? I don't know. I miss the Do Anh Lê Du.
Yeah.
Because that is probably only in Vietnam.
Yeah. And it's only in Vietnam.
Yeah. So then that was miss. I tend to like to go to places and soak myself up and learn whatever the heck, everything there is to learn in that place. And so I tend to forget about the old thing. I don't even think about.
You don't dig back into the past.
Yeah, while I'm trying to learn what is currently happening, all of my mental capacity, all of my mental space is like
here, present.
Yeah, it's here. Yeah, but when I reflect, then I go all the way back. Okay, how did I grow? Like all, like my journey is like from elementary school kid, middle school kid, now to here, this toothbrush thing, all the media, like what's happening? Like why did I make it big so quick?
And in the future. I know this is a long time from now, but do you see yourself living in Vietnam or staying here in the U.S.?
Probably in the U.S.
Interesting.
I have no idea. Like, I'm a 17, 18 year old kid. I don't know what I want to do. Like when I'm 50, I mean, I can imagine that. Oh, I'm going to own a couple houses in the U.S. and a couple houses in Vietnam. Something like that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. But my dream destination, though, is Europe.
You mean to visit or to live in?
To visit. And if I like it, I'll probably live in it, too.
Why? Why do you feel that way? Why Europe?
Why Europe?
Mm-hmm.
Initially, when I was a kid, I was just fascinated by the architecture. It's easy as that. The architecture... it's phenomenal, period.
Yeah.
The aesthetics, it takes my heart.
Easy. Wow. You have a deep connection to the architecture.
It's visually appealing. Yeah, very visually appealing. And I'm like, I'm moved by anything that's visually appealing.
What country specifically?
France, Italy, or Germany? Mostly. Probably Germany. Because it has the most quality scientists. The Nobel Prize category, the Nobel Prize in the Academy is like in Sweden, actually. But Sweden and Germany is like very close.
You know, it's the culture of specificity and detail orientation and attention to detail.
Yeah.
And just grinding the fuck out of life. It's just nose to the grind. Go as hard as you can.
I actually want to experience living in Bhutan once. Yeah, Bhutan has the happiest people in on Earth.
Yeah, yeah.
So like, well, they live in the village. They live up in the mountains. Beautiful scenery. There's no phones, no internet. So, dude, like, you have no stress. You just live your life. I have a very like low expectation in that environment. Like, you don't scroll on Instagram, you see Kylie Jenner with like 5 Gucci bags or something, mm-hmm. and then like, oh, like I don't have that. Oh, like there's all these awards, all these like, just it's they don't care about that, and like they're not stressed. Like, they just live their life very simply, like no expectation, no like, it's just very stress free. Very simple. Don't need to go big or anything. Just live each moment fully. And that's why they're like the happiest people.
Yeah. I'm interested if anybody's written any studies on Bhutan and the people and their outcome of the most happiest place, you know, on Earth. Education is probably not a priority. Jobs are probably not a priority, you know. Advancement is probably, because I think all those things go kind of in the opposite direction of
happiness,
you know. Yeah. You know what it is?
There's a study.
It's because when we do or die, when we race, that is where unhappiness is being created, right?
Unfulfilled.
Yeah. Because how can you ever enjoy just breathing clean air and mountains and just the purity of being in a community when you're worried about some Kylie Jenner and the Kardashians hundreds of miles away with their Gucci bags and their Prada, you know, jumpsuits? You know, it's impossible when we're being distracted mentally and spiritually by these doodai aspects of living.
Yeah. In Buddhism, there's this idea of needs and wants.
Mm.
It's just meet the needs, and then the wants is like, the more wants you have, the more unhappiness you bring to yourself.
Yeah.
And the Bhutan people, they just have the needs met.
Met.
That's it.
Like, but if you think about Vietnam in the countryside, right? Mm. Ông Hoàng Way, you think that their life is, you look at it and sometimes you think it's impoverished and poor, but some of those people are the most happiest people that I've met in my travels in Vietnam.
Mm.
The most giving, the most generous people in Vietnam are the people out in the boondocks.
Yeah. So they don't have as much to worry about. They don't have this self-created target that they need to hit.
Mm-hmm.
They just live their life as it is. Okay, there's a study from a Harvard researcher. He said that, you know, 60 years ago versus now, I don't know if it's 60 years ago or something, but it's like in the 20th century,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's in the 90s, 1900 something, right? Everything is less advanced compared to now, correct? Everything.
Yep.
Everything is less advanced. So education, healthcare, workforce, work safety, like everything. Road construction, every single thing. It's just less advanced for now. So theoretically, the life quality should go up, and it does go up because people live longer. You have more access to nutritious food, more access to more advanced education,
and they're living more painless lives as they're aging. So it's getting better.
Yes, except one thing also goes up: stress. Yeah. I don't know if it's, I need to search this up. Statistics have something like American is like the most stressful country or something.
Yeah, it's got to be. We work so much. But I think we work a lot of hours, but that we're the most productive? Because I heard like France doesn't work as much. Somebody just sent me a funny article where France doesn't work as much, but they're actually producing more during the times that they work. Mm. For, you know, for their hours that they put in.
That's effectiveness.
It's more effective. Yeah. It's interesting. I don't know if that's proven or not, but.
Well, I think Japan is like work the most.
Yeah.
Like 11 hour a day or something. Like 6 to like 9.
Yeah, they don't fuck 6 around.
6 a.m. to 9 p.m. I don't understand how that works.
Yeah. Yeah, their film industry is a terrible place to work too. They go 12, 14 hours, 16 hours easily without any concern for their workers.
And then, but their life expectancy is the highest, like 85 or something.
Oh, it's crazy, right?
Yeah, it's like, I don't understand. It's like, I honestly know, like, you work the most hours.
You're the most stressed.
But you have the highest life expectancy.
Maybe food diet.
Yeah. But the diet is very, this is very good, very healthy. Sashimi, sushi, the soup, the fish soup, all that. I heard that in Japan, if you leave a bag out in the street and if you come back 24 hours later, nothing will be lost or stolen.
Yeah, it's pretty safe society. Society filled with honor.
The integrity is high.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting place. Well, James, I look forward to seeing what you do in the next few years and love to have you back on the show whenever things change, when you, you know, move along the transitions in your life. Love to keep in touch and, you know, watch you make an impact in the world.
All right. Thank you. And thank you for having me in the show, for those kind wish words.
And maybe we can do this in Vietnamese one day.
Not sure about that. Not sure. Maybe I can rap one day, Andrew.
That'd be cool. I look forward to it. Thanks again, James.
All right.
Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. The Vietnamese is produced by Brittany Tran. Special thanks to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Crystal Trinh. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast. You can also find us on YouTube, where you can subscribe, like, and comment. Please rate and give us a review wherever you find our podcast.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.